Jackson to the end zone. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Ezukama for the touchdown.
Hand off to Marcus Fields down the sideline. Touchdown.
Welcome all to the Air Raid Podcast. Presented by Viva the Matadors. You were on once again with your boy, I'll be sure. And for the first time in a few episodes, I got my right-hand man, Dylan Smythe, with me. What's up, Dylan?
Oh, you know, back like I never left. Texas Tech is still doing Texas Tech things. You know, all is well in the world.
Yeah, it's like, actually, I think last time you were on the pod, was it the West Virginia game? Or was it?
It was actually West Virginia. So there was a new hope, but now the empire has risen.
Maybe that's the reason why Tech looked as bad as it's looked the last two games, because you haven't been there. So I'm going to blame you. Welcome back. Maybe Tech get back on winning ways, but they didn't this past Saturday. And here to talk with us about this game also is Jeremy Gillen. What's up, Jay?
What is up? I'm feeling like Adam Sandler in The Wedding Singer when he's singing that Somebody Kill Me song. That's where we're at.
I actually watched a QB Halloween this past weekend. Speaking of Adam Sandler.
Surprisingly funny.
Did you like it?
Yes. I really liked that. I didn't expect to like it, but it was a good movie.
I was expecting it to be an Adam Sandler flop, but it was not. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
I put it off for weeks. I'm glad I did. I finally watched it.
And the reason we're talking about Hubie Halloween is because we really want to talk about literally anything else besides the game that happened this past Saturday. Texas Tech lost to TCU 34-18. We don't like to curse on this show that often, but it was a shit show. Sorry, kids, cover your ears. It was a terrible showing. Dylan, what was your initial reactions from this game?
I mean, it's the same reaction we've had about this team for the last few weeks, it feels, other than West Virginia, what seemed to be a fluke. It's just the play calling isn't there. The decision making is questionable. The talent is being wasted. It's just this game was a microcosm of things that we already knew about this team, but they all came to bite us in the butt in this one.
But that's exactly what this team is right now. Jeremy, what else you got to say about their initial reactions to TCU?
The rivalry continues. The rivalry that is Texas Tech TCU continues. This is a good descriptor for this game. It was hard to watch. It was not as exciting as I was hoping it would be. The first half is very much different than the second half, which is also confusing. And yeah, Dylan's right. The further we get away from that West Virginia game, the more and more it just seems like a fluke.
Yeah, and Jeremy, I'm glad that you said that, because you know, this game really was as boring as it gets, right? Usually in Big 12 games, even when Tech is just getting waxed and they look terrible, at least the game has been exciting, right? Like, at least you get to watch the other team. Like, when Iowa State beat the crap out of us 66-10, Iowa State looked pretty good. It was a pretty good football game we were watching. When TCU won 82-27, at least we got to watch a good team. This is, like, this TCU team is not any good on offense. It was a really boring game. I feel like I was watching the Big 10, right? Nobody wants to watch the Big 10. Even people that live in the Midwest that are forced to watch the Big Ten don't want to watch the Big 12. So who signs up for this? It was a really boring game. And to realize that at least we don't even get the satisfaction of having our team win from it makes it even worse. So, guys, let's talk a little bit about the offense, who could legitimately get nothing going. Jeremy, can you speak on Columbia and Company?
Just from the get-go, no rhythm, no protection, no peace for Columbia in the backfield. Just giving up, can't remember how many sacks off the top of my head, just way too many sacks, running for his life out there. The running backs couldn't really get it going. We saw a little bit of Xavier White, which was kind of a bright spot in the running game. So Roderick Thompson didn't get nearly as many carries. Ezukama had opportunities. Who else have we seen in the past game? Miles Price kind of coming back for a little bit. Jalen Polk saw a number of receivers, but really nothing going. I'm trying to make it sound better than it was, but it was poopy.
We're just going to keep saying poop and butt all day? I'm for it. It's fine.
How else do we describe it?
Dylan, what do you think?
I think this offensive line is crap.
You sure you sure crap is the word you want to use?
I'd like to use a better one, but yeah, I think it really starts with no protection up front, and that was a problem for Alan Bowman, and it's proving to be a problem for Henry Colombi. And then it's really a problem for David Yost, who refuses to call anything because of it other than, you know, bubble screens, plays three-step drops. Like, asking Henry Colombi to throw downfield just isn't something that happens in this offense. And it showed in a big way. TCU was just sitting on all our underneath routes and jumping on it. And we refused to call anything different. It was just, I don't know. There was not really many bright spots in this offense other than maybe Xavier White and Eric Izukanma. Everything else was awful.
Well, you know how much I hate and refuse to give Gabe Patterson any credit. So I'm going to give it to Chad Glasgow. You all might remember that name because he used to be the defensive coordinator of Tech, and we hate him too. But Chad Glasgow did a really good job of designing defensive schemes to obliterate the already bad Tech offense. I mean, from the very first drive, they set how the game was going to be played. They had three sacks within the first two drives. Just offense couldn't get anything going. The O-line for the entire time was just mangled. And from that, because you already set the tone early on, then you can sit on those underneath routes. Then nothing can get going because that's all you really can do if you're Tech. It was really, really, really bad. I don't want to hear any more about, and I said, tweeted this, I don't want to hear about the interior line not being the problem. They're just as much of the problem as the tackles. The entire O-line, everyone's bad. Like, there's nobody that I feel confident in the O-line. Because of that, I don't think Henry Colombi really gets an opportunity to really do much. And again, Henry Colombi isn't good enough to make up for some of the issues we have, right? If you look at his stats, you say he wasn't that awful. 23 completions, 234 yards, 2 touchdowns. Trust me when I say, no, he was pretty bad too. But again, we don't really get to see just how good or bad he can be because his O-line is so terrible. Also, David Yost called 11 running back runs or 11 runs this entire game. That's it. Just 11. Nothing else, right? That's all he called. It was, and that's terrible. That's absolutely terrible. 11 runs this entire game? I get your O-line's bad, but I understand your O-line's bad. You got to get creative. TCU got creative. If you remember, they mixed up some Duggan runs in there. They had Barlow on some tosses, and we'll get to a little bit more about on the defense side of the ball. But TCU got a little bit creative. David Yost seems to be the least creative man on the planet. And the offense suffered from it. I do want to at least give a shout-out to Eric Izukanma, who is by himself as the only quality player on this entire offense, it seems. The only guy that can get anything going. And at least later in the game, it seemed like Colombi could at least just throw the ball up in the air and see what happens. And his prayers are answered twice to make the game not look despicable. But this offense was despicable. No other way around it. So enough about the offense, guys. I don't want to talk about the offense anymore. And it doesn't sound like y'all do either. So let's talk about the defense a little bit. Dylan, what did you think about this defensive team?
The defense, I was thoroughly impressed with. I mean, you know, through the first half, thoroughly impressed. I mean, through the first half, let's say, we only gave up 10 points. We held Max Duggan to not much on the ground in the first half. We made him pass. It wasn't working. We really did a good job of limiting that TCU defense and giving our offense a chance to keep us in the game. But it just it fell apart. Once Max Duggan decided, oh, man, I'm so much faster than the rest of these guys. And then you saw the 48-yard touchdown run and then the 81-yard touchdown run for Max Duggan to seal the deal. I was impressed. I really was. But the offense did them no favors. And then losing Max Duggan in the second half really, really finished us off.
Jeremy?
No touchdowns through the air, so that's a breath of fresh air from this whole season. But a lot of that comes from Duggan and his receivers, not nearly as much from, I guess, the defensive backs. But the rushing, not being able to stop the rush was detrimental. And like Dylan said, as soon as Duggan realized, you know what, maybe I could just run it, it was over. Like, he broke away on that ridiculously long run. in the third quarter, just to kind of seal the deal, or the fourth quarter, I think it was. They were better than they have been, but our offense wasn't doing enough to make it seem like it was really that good. It's just, what more can you ask for? Zach McPherson got that interception early, but that didn't really turn into much. It's just disappointing. Yeah. Better than the offense, but disappointing.
Yeah, I got to disagree with you, Dylan. I was not thoroughly impressed. I think the defense did a decent job in the first half. Now, I will say this. When we talked about it in the preview, that Duggan is better than he has been before as a passer, right? He's not as terrible as he is in the passer. And our colleague Mike Macon decided to piss off TCU Twitter last week by saying that basically Max Duggan is trash and Henry Columbia's a lot better and everybody on the offensive side of the ball is way better than TCU's. Leaps and bounds better than TCU's. And he got destroyed for it. But I'll say this, for a good half, for about 2.5 quarters, Mike Macon looked correct, right? Mike Macon looked right for about 2.5 quarters. That I don't know if necessarily Tech's offense showed him right, but TCU's offense looked awful for about 2.5 quarters. And then, like y'all said, Max Duggan said, how about I just run the ball? And after he broke off that big, long run, Sonny Cumbie basically threw out 3/4 of his playbook and was like, let's just run the ball. And that's what they did. They dug in, Barlow, and they just ran it down our throats because what was a strength of ours was the linebacking crew no longer became a strength. I mean, the guys kind of struggled a little bit in the second half containing the running quarterback that became Max Duggan, which is a struggle that every Tech defense has always had in the history of running quarterbacks, right? Like, I don't know a time where Tech's defense has ever contained a mobile quarterback. And Max Duggan deciding he wanted to be a mobile quarterback in the second half was doomed for this team.
Can we talk about Adam Beck's near pick six? Near godlike pick six of Duggan in the, what was that, the first or the second quarter? My goodness. Why did we have this guy? Why is this guy not starting? And also, why does this guy simultaneously just piss me off throwing TCU's wide receiver on the ground when they're clearly like 3 steps out of bounds?
He just made a great goodness, play. Man. And I think like the entire Tech Twitter just was like, oh my gosh, Adam Beck is balling out. And then he went and did that the moment everyone said that.
Yeah. I mean, and Adam Beck, you're right. He did have a really good game. You could argue he was the player of player of the game. And then he's back in the doghouse. And Adam Beck doesn't play very often either. Like, there's been a question all year of why isn't Beck playing that much. And maybe it's because every time he does, he has a really good game and then does something bonehead. Every game he plays well, and then there's something you're like, what are you doing consistently? At least he's the only player that's consistent on this team.
Yeah.
I do want to say Zach McPherson had a really good game. I got to give him credit after a terrible game that he had last week. Did come back. He had that interception, but also had a pretty good game. He was a big reason why Max Duggan could literally get nothing going in the passing game, because anytime he stared down McPherson's side and DeMarcus' field side, they both kind of locked down the receivers pretty well. But that means nothing when Max Duggan can just run down your throat.
And then I think another player, I mean, the linebackers played well as always, but Thomas Leggett really impressed me too until, yeah, he got juked out of his shoes by Max Duggan. But outside of that, Thomas Leggett played really well.
To be fair, Max Duggan runs a 4.54.
Well, and so did...
Yeah.
Yeah, he showed it on that 80-yard run.
The announcer said it.
We couldn't get one DK Metcalf.
The announcer said it on the broadcast. I was like, no, he doesn't. And I looked it up and like, oh, no, he does. He actually, his low is a 4.4. So I'm like, dang, Max Duggan got the wheels like that? You know, this whole time I'm calling him Ellinger Light.
Why? Why are they not running a triple option?
The way he was throwing it on Saturday, might as well. I just think that, again, when you're – it's tough when you're a defensive player and you see the ineptitude of your offense, eventually you're going to break. And that's, I think, just what happened in the third quarter. And the game was really over at that point.
You want to know who had the most yards this whole game?
Max Duggan?
Austin McNamara. No. The Irish Hammer, 330 yards.
Punter's the best player on your team. There's never been a time when the punter is the best player on the team, you're like, yes, we have a good team.
Meanwhile, that's something we haven't talked about. Yes. He had 2 of those punts blocked.
Yeah.
Like, not his fault, yeah, not but his my fault. Goodness. Special teams, what is going on there?
Thanks, Dylan.
And a great segue opportunity here, Dylan, to talk a little bit about the special teams. Shall we? So, before we even get to the part that I know everybody's antsy to talk about, the special teams was, outside of Austin McNamara, pretty abysmal. The entire time, TCU, any punt return they wanted to get, they got it. Darius Davis was fantastic for TCU on the punt return side. On punts were blocked by TCU. And then to kick it all off at the very, also not to mention Chuks Nwabuku, that one, we got lucked out because he had a muff punt that they ended up calling kick catch interference, which it was, but still. And so there's one. And then two awful punt return chances by him. And then the decision to go for it on second down in the fourth quarter. Was it or was it not a good decision to go for it on second down in the fourth quarter, Dylan?
I would love to hear someone argue that it was, because I just don't see it. I mean, maybe you want to, the idea was you want us to have as much time on the clock as possible. You know, you have to kick a field goal at some point in time and then go score a touchdown. However, the offense was moving. They haven't moved the whole second half. They had really nothing up until that drive. The offense was moving. And then the second down is what really kills it for me. If you really wanted to save all that time, why not do it on first down after an awful second down play? And then if you've already wasted, I think Jeremy said it was 22 seconds or something during the course of that play, let's run something on third down just in case, because I don't trust my kicker. You know, maybe Matt Wells does, despite the guy's like 1 of 5 on the season. I don't trust him in that scenario. Let's get at least a little closer. Run something out of bounds and try on third down. But I would have rather UC go get the touchdown and deal with the field goal later, just because the offense was moving. I don't understand the decision.
Jeremy, are you going to be the one to man up and say that was a good decision?
No, I will not. I will not take that mantle. Everybody who came up to me today to ask about it, always segued to it like, okay, in your wildest like understanding, it was always like this ridiculous way to get to saying, how would you fathom this? Like, go into the deepest, craziest part of your brain to try to grasp why he would do this. So that's just kind of a heartbeat of Texas Tech fans in general. I'm on the side of that. Dylan listed off all the reasons. Like, the main one for me is I would rather continue to push downfield until we cannot anymore. Why stop running offensive plays when you've got momentum? Why not? You know what's better than a touchdown and a field goal? 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns. I mean, why would you stop? Why would you stop to kick a field goal on 2nd and 4th? I mean, 2nd and 15, maybe, but like 2nd and 4th when there was that much time left on the clock. I mean, game clock. It's hard for me to rationalize what he did whenever there was all these factors around it. Not that it is a bad decision, but the scenario made it a bad decision.
I do want to preface all this by saying that he made this decision not at that moment. He made this decision earlier at the very beginning of the quarter. Remember, they went for 2. And the big question mark that we all had was, well, I mean, I guess it worked, but why do it, right? And he made the decision back at the beginning of the fourth quarter when we scored that touchdown that he was going to do this. Right. So it's not like run of the mill decision to say like, oh, you know what, let's just go do it here. He decided I'm going to go for 2 here. I'm going to kick the field goal early if we get down again. And so we're only down by less than a touchdown. That was his galaxy brain decision at the very beginning of the fourth quarter. So I do want to say that there's not a situation where you're like, oh, well, maybe Wells is flustered. This is he thought this well in advance. OK, I think my thing is this, and I said it pre-pod, but the decision to go for the field goal before the touchdown isn't a new one. It doesn't happen very often, but I've seen it done. It's not a wild decision. It's even a decision I've even in other times thought it was a decent decision, because you know you got to get a field goal and a touchdown. Just go ahead and you're only down 9. I mean, I get what you're saying, Jeremy, as far as might not get 2 touchdowns, but you're down 9. You know you need at least a field goal and a touchdown. So why not just get the field goal now? All right. I'm not going to say it's a good or bad decision, but it's a decision. It's a decision that's made. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. My biggest problem with it is your offense has not gotten anything going all game. All game, the only thing that you've been able to do is two wild, random throws up. The first one of Miles Price was a launch by Columbia that was underthrown. It wasn't a back shoulder. That was just a ridiculously underthrown ball. But we got lucky. The second one to Izukama was actually a really good throw and catch. But that's the only thing that's worked the entire game was through random throws. As far as drives go, this is probably the best drive you've had all game, right? So the best drive you've had all game, you're now at the 19-yard line. Keep driving. That's my one problem I have. Second problem I have is that you did it on second down, which is probably the worst down to do something like this. The times that I've seen it happen is you maybe make a play, you finally get in the field goal range within the 30, and you line up the field goal unit after either a big play or after you just got out of bounds or clock stopped, so you can just go out there, you're finally in it, first down, kick a field goal. Or your first two plays didn't work, it's third down, you're third and 15, it's going to be hard if you get the fourth down anyway, you're in field goal range, let's go ahead and get the field goal, right? Second down, when neither of those things are happening, we're only 4 yards away from a first, and you're on the 19-yard line, go score! Go score! Like, there's no reason to kick the field goal at this moment. You're already too far in. Like, that's something you do when you're on, like, the 25, 28-yard line, you still got a ways to go for a touchdown. You're in the red zone! You're wasting time now by having to do it all over again. You're in the red zone. Go score.
The hard work was already done at that
point. Yeah, go score.
Yeah, you're one play yes. from the touchdown. You're right
oh
there.
Oh, my God. It's just, I think it was, and my, it was what I believe is that he was too stuck in the way of, this is what I had planned. 10 minutes prior, I had this plan. So I'm going to keep going with the plan that I had set in place. But once again, it's, Wells, Yost, you're not in the Mountain West anymore. This is Power 5 football. You can't do, you're not smarter than everybody. Like, that's what I keep, when that play happened and he missed the field goal, because Trey Wolf, again, oh, that's, I forgot to even get to that part. Trey Wolf is 1-for-4 at this point. And on this season, he just made his first field goal of the season last week. He's not a good kicker. Why put your kicker that's not a good kicker in that situation? Lord Jesus, it's just bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. And it's the first thing I thought of is that, like, what Wells, y'all aren't not, or Wells, because Yost has actually at least been, he used to coach in Missouri, he's been in some other places. But Wells, you're not in the Mountain West anymore. This is Power 5 football. And even if Big 12 maybe is not the SEC or maybe not the Big 10, it's still a Power 5 conference. You're still going, you're not the smartest guy in the room anymore. Gary Patterson's going to, as much as we talk mess about him, he's going to go in the College Football Hall of Fame, right? You're not going to have a situation where you're just outsmarting him. You're not outsmarting Lincoln Riley. You're not outsmarting, maybe you'll outsmart Tom Herman, but you're not outsmarting most of the coaches that you have in your conference. So you're not going to have the galaxy brain moments. Just go out there and play football. Coach your guys up. Make smart calls. Like, just doing stuff like this is unnecessary. You're not the smartest guy in the room anymore. And it just, every week I feel like we have a situation where we're saying this about the coaching staff, where we're questioning them. What are you doing? Every week. So let's talk a little bit about the coaching staff. I mean, where, as a team, where are we at this point? We're 2-5 on the season, 7 games into a 10-game season, only 3 games left in the year. We said that they needed this game to be 500 because we have Oklahoma State towards the end of the year. That didn't happen this game. Doesn't look like 500 is even a chance of happening. Like, where are we as a team right now, Jeremy? What do you think about this Red Raider team?
There's so many things to, like, there are so many lines of narrative that are going on between, you know, what kind of defensive scheme or why are we running this? You know, I mean, it's something that we talk about on the pod is, you know, the 3-man rush. It just does not work. Get more pressure. And I'm all for that one. Then there's the very popular, why the hell are we always running screens? What is David Yost even doing? There's the, you know, is Alan Bowman better than Henry Columbia? Okay, now Henry Columbia is going to be the godsend. Okay, no, he's not. Where's the actual issue? And then the rising one about the offensive line being absolute garbage. I mean, we were promised early on, you know, Matt Wells came in. I mean, and there's no credit to be given. But, like, when you come in as a coach, you say good things that you want to do. What did he want to do? He wanted to recruit near. He's done that. He wanted to run a balanced scheme. He's not really done that between running and passing. He's wanted to make us competitive, and that's just laughable at this point. There are some, like, there's last year, I'll put it this way. Last year, when we had five or so games that were decided by one touchdown or less, that showed at least me and a number of people that I know, okay, Wells is building a program, is going to kind of take the Matt Rhule way of, like, you know, we're doing bad, but we're really close. And then the next year, solving those problems. Something I like that you said was Cumby saw that, okay, Duggan ran and, like, blitzed through these guys for an 80-yard touchdown. Why are we passing the ball? Just run it. That ability, that coaching ability and wisdom to do what is working is not something that we are getting at all at Texas Tech. We have seen how opening up the playbook to pass downfield has proven to be fruitful, aside from a couple drops or a couple overthrown balls. That's something that we're missing from previous years at Texas Tech, is like the deep ball, the deep ball, the deep ball. And yeah, it didn't always work in the same way that a two-point conversion doesn't always work. But when it does, it's awesome, and it's, like, really fruitful, and it pays dividends. But we aren't seeing that. We're seeing coaching staff that are very set in their ways because it worked. it's worked in the past at various institutions, most recently being Utah State. And so they want to implement that here, what they consider a successful, bringing it back, the successful pedagogy of making a team work. But it's not, like you said, this is Power 5. This is the Big 12. And although we're not, like, the biggest, baddest football conference in the world, this is a conference where you have to come and you have to adjust and you have to accept you have to accept wisdom. You have to change as the game changes around you. And we just have not seen that. I tweeted it out that I think there's a lot of good recruiting that Wells is doing and that the staff is doing that we have not seen from his predecessor. But that is not, like, that is almost as the general talent is rising up around him. He's the exposure of him just not really being a good coach for this league is getting more and more obvious. So we're kind of in a pickle.
You talked a little bit about Bowman versus Columbia. And in pre-pod, you brought up an interesting point. They're now at the point, seven games in, where they've played virtually the same amount of football. Bowman started four games, Columbia started three, but Columbia also played in two of the games that Bowman played in. So they've played virtually the same amount, and it seems like their stats are identical. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. So something that we noticed earlier, and it's something I talked about last pod, is, you know, we had a game where Columbia played well in West Virginia. Man, cotton season. We had a game where Columbia played completely frazzled against Oklahoma. So TCU was the game for us to see, okay, we have another good defense. How do we respond now that we've been exposed by Oklahoma? And it was awful. But it got me thinking, okay, you know, Emory has been saying time and time again, it's not the quarterback, it's not the quarterback, it's not the quarterback, it is the offensive line. And while I accept that, yeah, our offensive line is terrible, I thought, well, let's look at where they're sitting right now, because they both played kind of the same amount of time. So for all intents and purposes, these are the same people. Only 20-something attempts separate them, but Henry Columbia, 989 yards off 100 completions. Alan Bowman, 920 yards off 90 completions. Henry Columbia, 66.2% completion percentage. Alan Bowman, 65.7. That's not even a full point. Not even a full point. Their averages per average yards per pass. Average yard per pass. Henry Columbia, 6.6. Alan Bowman, 6.7. Touchdowns. Henry Columbia, 8 touchdowns. Alan Bowman, 7 touchdowns. Interceptions, they both have 4. The only difference is that Henry Columbia has gotten the worst of the offensive line. He's been sacked 12 times. And he's, you know, but their rating, Henry Columbia, 133.4. Alan Bowman, 133.1. So there's a reality here where the offensive line and maybe Yost's hesitancy because of that offensive line, it doesn't matter who we put back there. This could be Patrick Mahomes back here in his college days. But get the picture here, is that this could be an extremely talented quarterback back here. And this system that we're in with the offensive line that we have is really kind of putting a cap on the success that we're seeing offensively. And so there's kind of like this multi-level conspiracy theory of problems that is kind of culminating in how we are seeing Henry Columbia and Alan Bowman, that this may not even be a quarterback issue. It may just be an offensive line and offensive scheme issue.
Possibly. They're very similar. I mean, Dylan, what do you think? What's the state of this team right now? Is it just an O-line issue? Does everybody suck? I mean, what is it?
I mean, I think you can start with the O-line and draw a lot of lines from there like we've been doing for a while. But I think the problem is the offense. I don't think the players believe in David Yost anymore. I think they're sick of the scheme. I think you can look at a player like TJ Vasher. What the hell's going on with TJ Vasher? They won't tell us anything about him week to week. He suited up this week, but he didn't play very much. I just think there's a lot of talent and a lot of people there that are really frustrated with this offense, and rightfully so. And I don't know, I'm losing faith. I've lost faith in this coaching staff, at least David Yost in particular. Matt Wells's decision making is just awful. And I don't know what the solution is, but I think it kind of has to start with changing up the coaching staff a little bit and hoping that some of these recruits stay and he can turn it around with his guys. But he's got to do better now. I think in a season where we had low expectations, he has not met them. You know, it's really bad what he's done with Texas Tech football this season.
Well, let's get off Texas Tech football because I'm getting more depressed the more we talk about it. So let's talk about the rest of the Big 12. Besides this game and another game, it was actually some exciting football. So let's get the other game out of the way. Kansas got mollywopped by Oklahoma. Thankfully, they lost by more points than Oklahoma beat us, as Oklahoma won 62-9. Guys, is Oklahoma back? Dylan?
I mean, yeah, I think they're the favorites to win the conference at this point. Oklahoma has really turned it around, and Spencer Sanders, ever since he got benched, he's just really been a totally different quarterback. Or not Spencer Sanders, Spencer Rattler, ever since he got benched, has been a much improved quarterback. It is Kansas. Don't take much stock into it, but, you know, 62-9, that's pretty dang convincing.
Jeremy, did you watch this game?
No, I didn't. But I see that Rattler still threw an interception against Kansas Jayhawks, so who knows? Dylan makes a good point. It is just Kansas. I think Spencer Rattler has been a different beast since he got benched. Didn't he get injured in this game?
Oh, yeah.
Went out for a bit?
I don't know if he got injured, but he did go out.
Anybody?
For a bit.
Yeah, I didn't know the update on that. But as long as Spencer Rattler is still behind center for them, I think that they're just only going to get better and better, which sucks because Oklahoma with a good quarterback.
I will
quarterback,
say Tanner Mordecai looked pretty good when he was out there. That's all I'm going to say. Quarterback controversy in Oklahoma? Possibly. Baylor at 17th-ranked Iowa State. Baylor actually showed up in this game. Only lost by 7, 31-38. Like I said, there's no moral victories unless you suck. Well, Baylor sucks, so good job for them. What did you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, we talked about it. I think that Iowa State was going to get the win no matter what, but I did not expect Baylor to fight as much as they did. Charlie Brewer having a better game than he's had most of the season, proving dividends against Iowa State. But, you know, this wasn't a surprise to anybody except Baylor fans who are like, wow, we can actually play a little football. It makes next weekend a little bit exciting.
I think Iowa State almost wanted to lose this football game. I mean, Brock Purdy turned the ball over 3 times. Outside of giving the ball to Breece Hall 31 times, they didn't impress me a whole lot. Credit to Baylor. Yeah, they did show up for this football game. Charlie Brewer, despite a few mistakes, looked better. The players are standing up for Charlie Brewer after the loss, saying that's my quarterback. So it's good to see, but if anything, this just makes me a little less optimistic for playing Baylor.
So, Dylan, what you're saying is that Brock Purdy, he didn't impress you much.
Brock Purdy wanted to lose that game.
You like that nice little one? And thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Charlie Brewer actually coming. I will say this before I get off this game. It's always hilarious when a guy – throws 2 interceptions, but after the game, players are like, yeah, that's my quarterback. Told you he's still decent. Yeah, he don't worry about the fact that he's also part of the, even though he's part of the reason we were in, he's also part of the reason why we lost. That's still my quarterback.
It's something I would like to see from Tech players.
Yeah, well, our team's nowhere near as good. So we got 14th ranked Oklahoma State barely beating the Kansas State Wildcats. Will Howard played terribly, but Kansas State still was right there. Actually, I say this, as bad as Will Howard played through the air, had a little Max Duggan in him because he was a running, gunning son of a bee. Dylan, what'd you think?
Yeah, I think the way Kansas State runs the football gives them a chance in a lot of games. And I think had I been in the preview, I would have said they had a chance in this game. I still would have picked Oklahoma State. But Oklahoma State's looking a little more vulnerable. Their defense got banged up a little. They're not looking outside of Ongbong Bumiga. I think I said that right.
Good job.
They're fading a little bit. So I was surprised to see it this close, but I knew it was going to be a close one.
Jeremy, what'd you think?
Man, I think Oklahoma State fans are so thankful that they walked away from this one with a win because it felt like Kansas State. It felt like Kansas State's game. They outperformed them in nearly every metric of the game. They gave away, I think, an interception and a fumble. But they outperformed them, and you felt like Kansas State is just playing good old reliable Kansas State football, and they're about to take down Oklahoma State. But can't count out Oklahoma State. Getting the win there is kind of really big for them, but Dylan's right. It shows a lot of vulnerability. It shows that they were not going to be the team to lead the Big 12 to the conference or to the college football playoff. So once again, we are just eating ourselves left and right, which is always great for Big 12 football. Thumbs up.
I will say, for those that didn't watch this game, Kansas State lost the game. Like I kind of like they absolutely lost the game. They gave when they were driving in the fourth quarter, Will Howard fumbled it to where Okie State took it to the house. Then after scoring a touchdown that was going to be, and they needed a 2-point conversion to tie the game up. Bad play, didn't get the 2-point conversion. Then when they got the ball back, one play in, Will Howard throws an interception. K-State absolutely lost this game. But the fact that it was even this close should be cause for concern if you're an Oklahoma State fan. All speaking of teams that just did not want to win a game that they had every reason to win, West Virginia lost 17-13. I picked the Mountaineers in this game. They should have won this game, but I don't just – Neil Brown's guys just didn't want it. Jeremy, what'd you think?
Dude, it was all Bijan Robinson. It was all Bijan Robinson. Texas just demolished West Virginia's defense with running. I don't think this was anybody else's game. Yeah, kudos to Jarrett Dagey for having such a prominent game through the air without a touchdown, but, you know, still getting it done, slicing up the Texas defense. But, man, I'm just so bummed that West Virginia didn't pull this out. I felt like throughout the whole game, I felt like, especially there in the fourth quarter, that they could make it happen. And, yeah, just fell towards the Longhorns, and somehow Texas is sitting at 5-2 instead of 2-5 as they probably deserve.
What did you think, Dylan?
Once again, in typical Texas Longhorn fashion, they really didn't want to win this game, but somehow ended up winning. Yeah, I think Jeremy said it. A lot of credit to Bijan Robinson. He was a beast in this game. West Virginia could not tackle him. And then I think the story of the game for West Virginia, Letty Brown had 47 yards in this game. So give Texas a little credit for that. But dang, did they want to lose this game? And it was right there for West Virginia, who just couldn't put it together.
Letty Brown was pissed. He was on the sideline.
Oh, yeah.
Barking up and down. You don't see that a lot from college players. It's more of an NFL thing. But he was very pissed. I'm going to tell you something. The last three drives for West Virginia, I'm going to bring this out here. People didn't watch the game. Drove it down, had first and goal, second and goal, third and goal, ended up having a kick. Down by a touchdown, ended up having to kick a field goal when they should have won. On a second and goal, passed to Winston Wright Jr. in the end zone, dropped it. Not only that, but he also dropped it, right? So that goes. They end up kicking a field goal. They're down by four. They get the ball back because the defense stops to the Longhorns. They get it down to the 16. And on fourth and one, for some reason, they decided to call a passing play. They had they had third and one pass play, fourth and one pass play. Both are incomplete. It's a turnover on downs. But get this. They get the ball back again and drive it down to the, once again in the red zone. They have 3rd and 8, pass to Letty Brown, get it to the 8-yard line, which in my opinion might have been a first down, but did they challenge it? No, they didn't review it. It just goes on. Actually, no, they did review it, but it was play stands. And on a 4th and 1, game on the line, guess what they did? They call a run play, gentlemen? No. Caught another pass play that was incomplete. if I didn't want Texas to lose so bad, this would have been a hilarious sequence. West Virginia, 3 opportunities to tie or win the game. 3 opportunities, squandered it. But I'll say all that, but in the end, they still had an opportunity to get the ball back. But on 3rd and 5, they let Sam Ellinger complete a pass, and that basically lost.
So deflating. We feel you, West Virginia.
It is what it is. Everybody in the conference is basically, the way the conference is set up right now, I think, is that you have 7 teams that are all not far from each other, right? Iowa State and Oklahoma State right now are leading the conference. K-State, Oklahoma State, Texas are all right behind them. West Virginia, TCU are right behind them. And then you have 3 teams that are pretty bad. Baylor, Tech, and Kansas. We're all pretty bad. Luckily for the Texas Tech Red Raiders, we have Baylor and Kansas still left on our schedule. Unluckily for the Texas Tech Red Raiders, we don't know if we're worse than those 2 teams.
We're going to learn today.
We can just do a coaching roulette at the end and switch coaches and see how that goes.
I'm for it. Dave Aranda's a Tech grad. All right, I'm for it.
I was going to say something I wanted to say on this podcast. We talk about other Big 12 coaches we could have got, but man, I'm looking over at SMU right now with some serious FOMO.
Yeah.
And that Utah State opening, I'm just saying, hey, I won't be mad at it. I won't be mad at you, Wells. Hey. You just like...
Tell me you can't get a Dykes to coach in Lubbock. Come on now.
Hey, I will say before we get off this, I've wanted Dykes to be the Lubbock coach since 2010. I've wanted Sonny Dykes. Since 2010, I've wanted Sonny Dykes. And so many people, oh, why do you like him? He didn't even do anything at Cal. What are you talking about? All right. We see what he's doing at SMU. I wanted Sonny Dykes here. He'd be a good addition. Last thing you want to say, Jeremy?
You think that Dykes would get more of a welcome and more money into the football pot than
maybe
Kingsbury
not more,
coming back?
But I think about the same. Like, I think it'd be. I think it. Wells is turning into our Tuberville to where he has the fan base kind of divided, or he's unifying us into where we all are starting to dislike him. I don't know. Either way, I think Dykes would do for the program what Kingsbury did for us back in 2013. But. Yeah, I don't know.
Just with more head coaching experience, which is what we need.
Dylan, anything else you want to say?
Follow us on the Air Raid Podcast. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Yeah.
Remember.
Subscribe.
Jeremy will donate $5.
No, stop telling people that.
For every review that you post on there. Any review. Doesn't matter the number. He will donate $5 to your favorite charity.
What?
So make sure you do that.
Change the rules now.
Follow at Jeremy Dane. Follow Dylan, whatever social he has, if I never remember. Follow me at Mr_Albie Shore. And follow the home team at Air Raid Podcast. As always, you've been listening to the Air Raid Podcast, Ben of the Matadors and SB Nation. Stay wrecked, people.